Has cultural Marxism succeeded, whereas economic Marxism has failed? We're going to talk about that right now in this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Paul Kanger, who's written quite a few books on the subject of Marxism and socialism, including the book called Takedown, which is all about the Marxist plan to take down the family, 100 years in the making. Paul, welcome back to the program. So great to have you on again.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Always good to be with you.
Okay, now I heard a great discussion you were doing with Dr. Frank Wright, the president and CEO of D. James Kennedy Ministries, which is where I work full time. And you all were talking about cultural Marxism, and you made a great point, and that is that economic Marxism has failed wherever it's been tried, but unfortunately, cultural Marxism has done really well. Explain this. What's the difference between the two, and get us up to date?
Well, thanks, Jerry. Yeah, first of all, I really enjoyed that interview, and he is a wonderful heir to the legacy of D. James Kennedy, who was probably the first person where I heard some of this stuff back in, probably would have been the 1990s maybe, when I first converted to Christianity. And it might have been D. James Kennedy that even made me aware of the fact that the family was mentioned in the Communist Manifesto. Marx and Engels actually have the phrase abolition of the family, and they followed it with an exclamation mark, of all things. And they even referred to it back then in 1848 as an infamous proposal of the communists. So, you know, the founding manifesto for communism, 1848, they're already talking about the abolition of the family, and even then they're already calling it an infamous proposal of the communists. So, you know, that's quite amazing.
A proposal that they obviously agreed with.
That's right, that they obviously agreed with. They also talk about abolition of religion. I mean, that is one of the things that drives me crazy when I speak on campuses around the country, is when I run into a young person who says, well, yeah, the Communist Manifesto, really a pretty good idea if you just read the book. I mean, you'll see it talks about love and sharing, and right away, Jerry, I know I have them. My next question is, oh, really, have you read it? And they always say, I've read bits and parts of it. And I don't want to embarrass them, but I'll tell them, see, listen, go to something like Marxist.org. You can find it there for free. It's a really short book. It's probably shorter than the New Testament. You could probably read the thing in one or two nights. You've got no excuse for not reading this book. Go and read it, and then come back to me and tell me if you really think it's a great book after all this. And there's no way that they will, because it's a horrible little book. But to get back to your question, really the difference between sort of classical Marxism, which is what Marx and Engels did with the Communist Manifesto, and cultural Marxism, which really came the century later, especially with people like Antonio Gramsci, the Italian Marxist, 1920s, 1930s, the Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism in Germany, the 1930s, and that included Wilhelm Reich, who literally coined the term the sexual revolution, Theodore Adorno, Max Horkheimer, Herbert Marcuse was the most popular of all of that group. He came to the United States. They came to the United States. But they pioneered what was basically of a weird, bizarre form of Freudian Marxism. And you know, that would probably horrify your listeners. But you're taking the worst ideas of the 1800s, Marxism, and you're fusing them with the worst ideas of the 1900s, Freudianism. And they created this basically cultural form of Marxism that was about sex, family, culture, and they sought to inculcate it, to bring it in, through the vectors of media, movies, cinema, and above all, education, education, education. And this group thought, there's no way that we're going to achieve a revolution through sort of traditional class economic-based Marxism, because capitalism will blow us away every time. But if we try this through what Ralph de Toledano called an unrestrained miasma of sex, if we try this through sexual liberation, really appealing to people's worst temptations and vices, And if we do this through education in particular, and atheism would be necessary to this too, because you got to take down tradition, religion, traditional values. But the cultural Marxists said if we can do all of this through culture, through a different form of Marxism, that's where we can really take down the West. And really, Jerry, that's where they've had their success.
Isn't that interesting? So basically the short answer is yes, cultural Marxism appears to be succeeding, at least on the college campus and even at lower levels of education.
Oh, absolutely. Sam Gregg of the Acton Institute makes the point that the really insidious thing about cultural Marxism is that the people who are advancing it and really engaging in it, they don't even know what it's called. And if you told them, hey, you're advancing cultural Marxism, first of all, they'd give you a funny look, and then they'd probably start ridiculing you because they'd say, well, that sounds crazy. I've never even heard of that. I'm not a cultural Marxist. I don't even know what a cultural Marxist is. But that's really the insidious aspect of it, is that by pushing through ideas like taking down of all tradition, believing that you can redefine the family, believing that sex isn't just between a man and a woman, but there's all sorts of different types of sexuality. That, as Herbert Marcuse has said, everybody is capable of at least bisexuality, right? That we are polymorphous in our sexual desires. Mm-hmm. In believing that that there's not just two types of genders, there's multi-genders, that there can be numerous types of marriage and family relationships. All of that stuff is exactly what the cultural Marxists have pushed and have tried to implement. Now, the typical person who's out there with a rainbow sticker on their car or their door, who's just, fancies himself or herself a kind of good-hearted, tolerant, liberal seeking diversity, right? They've never heard of Herbert Marcuse. They've never heard of Wilhelm Reich. The Frankfurt what? They've never heard of any of this stuff. But they are advancing the goals, the sort of takedown goals of these radical cultural Marxists without even knowing it.
Isn't that interesting? Is this part of what's going on on the streets of America, where we see all these conflicts, we see protests? We've never seen that before. We've never seen a non-peaceful transition from one presidency to another, except for, I guess,
well,
in the Civil War.
I don't know if I want to go that far with it directly linking to the protests, but I mean, I can tell you that these ideas that we're talking about, you and I know this, 71 different gender options, same-sex marriage. You and I saw this. This stuff all crawled out of the universities. I mean, that's where it came from. And for as far as colleges that teach this stuff, this is a very, very important point. This will give people listening something concrete to really tie this to. They don't have, like, departments of cultural Marxism. They call it critical theory, is what they call it on college campuses. And if you want an immediate go-to example of this, just type in Occidental College. Now, you know this, Jerry.
Hey, that's where Obama went. Occidental.
That's where Obama
went. Yeah.
Yeah. Occidental College.
Before it went on to Columbia.
Department. Yeah, they have a Department of Social Justice and Critical Theory. Oh. That pretty much says it all, doesn't it? And if you go to their webpage, I don't have it in front of me, but I went to it as recently as last week. You go there, and it talks about social justice, critical theory, queer theory, gender studies, LGBTQ, all of that stuff. And I believe, I'm pretty sure, that it uses the words cultural Marxism in the short description, too. So they push cultural Marxism under the flag of this concept of critical theory.
You know, this does not apply to Grove City College, but a lot of our colleges are becoming a ripoff. I'm serious, an economic ripoff.
Oh, yes, it's terrible.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what do you do with a degree like that?
What you do is you take down America.
Oh.
You basically do what they're doing. Or even you go work for places like Google and Facebook and Yahoo and these other places, and you redefine human nature. You redefine the culture. That's really what they're doing. A lot of these places, they come out of these Ivy League or very high-priced colleges with degrees in critical theory, and they end up, working and marketing for whatever Fortune 500 company in New York that, you know, you delude yourself if you think the boards of these places are conservative. They're not. They're run by liberal millennials out of Ivy League colleges with degrees in whatever.
Wow.
And the people listening, if you're sending your kids or grandkids to these schools, then you're paying for this. That you've been badly, badly duped. And shame on you if you're paying $30,000 to $40,000 a year to have your kid or grandkid brainwashed by this stuff.
Wow. What is the phrase white privilege, and what is that? Where does that play into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just general sort of wild left radicalism. And if there's any tie there to cultural Marxism with that, it's probably in the general area of sort of victimology. Marx and Engels wrote about the repressed groups that are out there, and for them it was the proletariat. That would be the sort of redeemer class that would usher in the utopia. And the thing that the cultural Marxists are doing, they're always looking for a new proletariat. And, they'll take about as many different proletariats as they can possibly find. And in more recent years, that has been, ethnic minorities. It's been women. But now it's, LGBTQ, transgender. Go read Angela Davis, the honorary co-chair of the Women's March in Washington. Read her speech posted at the website of the Women's March, and she goes through and she lists all these different groups. And she's a classical Marxist and a cultural Marxist. She ran for president of the United States, and she was on the vice presidential ticket for Communist Party USA with Gus Hall. She's a sort of classical cultural Marxist. So they're always looking for different groups like that as the next kind of victim redeemer class to usher forth their ideas.
Huh. And the final project is what? I mean, what do they really want to achieve in society?
It's a great question, Jerry. What is the end goal? I think all you can really say is they're critical of everything that's traditional, that's absolute, of a sort of biblical Judeo-Christian worldview, of the idea of a set idea of the family, of sexuality, of human nature. Karl Marx said that communism is about, quote, the most radical rupture in traditional relations, unquote. Mm. And really, cultural Marxism is about that to the nth degree. So in a way, they can't really tell you what their end goal is. All they could tell you is they're critical of everything and they want to take down everything that's traditional.
Wow. And you know what's so interesting? I've shared this with you in an email, but Joshua Muravchik, who was a former socialist himself, from a line of socialists, but he became a conservative and wrote a book called Heaven on Earth, which was a critique of socialism and a history of it. And he said in an interview we did with him for D. James Kennedy Ministries, he said Marx and Engels actually began their work as an anti-God, philosophy or quest, as opposed to beginning with economics. In other words, they came to the economics and the socialism part through their anti-God and not the other way around. In other words, God was the first target that they set their sights on. I thought that was fascinating.
Well, that's true. He's absolutely right. And I would add this, that all of the Marxists, from the classical to the cultural, in the end, what they're really all against is God. So if there's one common thread or glue that's holding all of this together, it's that they are against the Judeo-Christian worldview and tradition. So in a way, whereas they can't all tell you where they're going, they can all tell you what they're against.
Yeah. Wow, isn't that interesting? And on that point, we'll have to close this discussion. We've been talking with Dr. Paul Kanger, author of many great books, and you can get more information at visionandvalues.org. And Dr. Kanger is a professor, by the way, at Grove City College, both of political science and of history. Paul, thank you so much for enlightening us.
All right, Jerry, take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.